Dear Lord, Great Spirit, may we feel truth and honor wisdom. May we cultivate love as the armor gives way. May we be fully at peace as we find presence. May we be free from harm as we find full expression. May we be healthy and our vessels be clear. May we be strong as our light shines through. May our endurance withstand all pressures. May the will power all action as we align with our higher selves. May we be at ease and happy as we rest in the equal insignificance and importance of all.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
and so it is.
Welcome to Forge Your Health Podcast. This is a show about personal empowerment. I am Justin Ribner.
And I'm Emily Jones.
Tune in weekly as guests join us from all walks of life
to seek richness in the daily experience,
to help define individual values,
to cast aside imposed identity,
and to seek a dynamic range of emotional content
by following our highest excitements,
and by investing in all things naturally whole and good on this earth.
If there's anything mentioned in today's show that's worthy of show notes, then you can head over to forgeyourhealth.com and click on podcasts on the main menu to get at those. If there's any information that you want to track down that's not necessarily something that would be put in the show notes, then you can feel free to drop us a DM on Instagram or contact us through our website. As always, please, please, please share this show with anyone in your network that you think can use it or that you think would benefit from the content that we are bringing you. And if you have not done so already, then head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure that you are subscribed. Also, give us a shout if you know someone you would want us to have on the show. Now, if you really value the show and you feel as though we're contributing to your life in a meaningful way, then there are a couple of ways you can show us you appreciate all of our hard work. First is by leaving a review. This means the absolute world to us, and it is the primary way that these platforms that we're coming to you through work and how we reach more people is by you showing us and them that the podcast has been worth your time by writing us a short review. And now, every month, if you are interested at all in free coaching, and yes, that means totally free coaching, all you have to do is leave us that review on iTunes and send us a screenshot of it to justin@foragerhealth.com, and you can be picked as our review of the month. Your review will be read on the show as a special thank you, and you'll be given the opportunity to join me for 14 days of free coaching. Now, that is actually a really huge offer. Depending on the person and the type and the amount of work that they need, that can sometimes be the equivalent of a full 10-hour coaching package for a new client with me. This is a fantastic opportunity if you are interested in receiving personal guidance with your health, but you're not quite sure where to turn to or what health coaching is or what lifestyle-based healthcare looks like. And so this is a fantastic way to kind of test out the waters, and real lasting growth can be available to you just through this 2-week transformational experience. You're going to go through my full intake, full lifestyle evaluation, full health history, full fitness assessment, and we are going to break down what is going on in your life that could be addressed as your low-hanging fruits in order to express your truth and embody the full vitality available to you in any given moment on any given day. Thank you for listening, and here is today's show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Forge Your Health Podcast. This week, we have a very special interview with an old friend and mentor of mine, Jackie Knechtel. Jackie is co-founder of Flow Consciousness Institute, and for those of you who are longtime listeners of the show, you may remember my conversation with Justin Fairman. Justin is Jackie's partner in crime, and because Jackie was not available on the date of our interview on Flow Mastery and all things Flow Consciousness Institute, Jackie was kind enough to lend her time at a later date to have a totally different conversation with me on the show. So today, we go into the depths. Like, we really dive deep into a very nuanced philosophical discussion. Jackie was a real trooper in taking on the big questions that I had for her in today's conversation. We really facilitate this space and time where we touch on a lot of sensitive topics, and I knew that she was the type of personality and that she sported the level of professionalism and centeredness in herself that she would be able to really address some sensitive subjects that relate to a lot of the strain that we are currently under sociologically from the perspective of being a truly heart-centered entrepreneur who has put in so much work to spread love and make the world a better place and help people really enable themselves to unlock their full potentials. So we dive into diversity and equality in personal development. We talk about how to overcome like imposed expectations of a culture that is undergoing rapid shifts right now. As someone who is trying to grow, we talk about what heart-centered businesses of the future might look like a little bit and how vulnerability plays a role in the future of leadership. We talk about how to remain empathetic to a variety of perspectives while we share our ideas for what we think a brighter future might look like. And by we, I mean we all in that context. And we talk a little bit about how to change like the foundational narrative that is running the program in progressive fields like natural health and like heart-centered entrepreneurship in the private sector. We also then get into looking for balance in healing our wounds and how to not only seek the specific care that we might need according to whatever our stories may be, but how to avoid the pitfalls of getting stuck in our comfort zones and really how to ask permission of those we know and of ourselves in order to get our needs met. So this conversation, it is a little bit esoteric. It is a little bit philosophical. There are many points and places, probably all my fault and none to Jackie's, where there is definitely some blanket statement kind of mentality being thrown around just in the way that I had to ask these questions in order to broach these topics. But there's also really, really powerful messaging here. There's a lot of comfort, there's a lot of care, there's a lot of love, there's a lot of wisdom. And in addressing these points of sociological dissension in this time and in this space with a person like Jackie, I think that what was uncovered were actually very simple, profound takeaways and action steps that anybody listening to this episode is really going to not come away empty-handed. So once again, I just want to give a big shout out to her for joining me on the show. You can find her at Jackie Knechtel at Instagram and Facebook. It's just her name, JackieKnechtel. And also at flowconsciousnessinstitute.com. You can just Google Flow Mastery or Flow Consciousness Institute. It'll come right up. It was a blessing getting to sit down and jive with her on these intricate topics. She has been a tremendous influence for me in my own personal development journey and for many hundreds or thousands of others literally around the globe, and continues to provide a great deal of inspiration. So without further ado, here is today's show. Before we dive in, I do like to start my podcast with like a 2-minute mini breathwork ceremony.
Nice.
And yeah, it's just like, I find that especially with people who are far away, it's really profound. You know how any kind of meditative experience that is done in a group setting, it's like an elevated experience compared to when you do it like daily practice at home, or at least it has a higher tendency to be. I find that even with two people instead of one person connected over Zoom, like it's a little bit self-serving. I love breathing with people.
So. I'm totally with you. And yeah, it creates a coherent field.
Yes, exactly. That's the, I wish I had those words for every other time I've tried to explain it. Creates a coherent field. I like that.
There you go. Feel free to take it and run.
All right. And for the listeners at home, I play like music that plays at healing frequencies during our breathing. And that creates kind of like a, even more of a ceremony for whoever listens to the podcast, as well as gives good time markers for people who want to skip it to skip it, because they just skip it to where the music ends.
Nice.
So yeah, I do 4-7-8 breathing.
Okay.
So in through the nose, out through the mouth, inhale for 4, hold for 7, exhale for 8. And we'll just take a moment to center ourselves before we close our eyes and tune in and take that first breath.
Beautiful. All right.
Okay.
There all day.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful space to be in. It's one of my favorites. Like I'll do that infallibly every day, even though I have other modalities, because it's just beautiful having the quick bounce back. Like it's amazing what that like 1 minute can do.
Totally. So,
yeah. I want to start by saying that I know you as like a really powerfully intuitive and grounded individual that like through the stories that you've told, through the courses that I've gone through with you and Justin now, it's almost like you are one of these like almost magical unicorns where people talk about you can manifest your own life, but nobody gives examples aside from you and a select few others that I've run into. And the stories that you tell are really amazing. But one of the biggest takeaways and like really the major things that I've gotten from the work that you do is that, as I said before, the more we grow, the more alike we become, and the, you know, the less separate
we are in our perception, regardless of spiritual or religious beliefs, which like a lot of religious and spiritual beliefs in all kinds of avenues talk about how we are all one. But I mean more on like a personal level of like, you know, how we treat people, how we eat, how we like to go about our day, you know, even, you know, like favoring mornings instead of nights as a sillier example of like, you know, it's just, it's amazing to me how it's almost like, you know, how many different entrepreneurial pursuits and advice and it's personal growth classes, it's all like niche oriented, right? What Flow Mastery and Flow Consciousness Institute is not that. You welcome people from all over. And then we learn over time, like, oh, like our labels may be important in some aspects, but the reason why you're all welcoming is because we can all arrive at very similar conclusions from all different walks of life. And that's kind of like really blown me away how your coursework is universally accepting of people. And then we all come into this conversation. There's so much common ground. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Is that deliberate? Like, is it deliberate that you invite everyone in? And then what are some takeaways that you have seen personally from bringing in like the world of diversity and seeing people come out of their shells in that way?
Yeah, I don't know that it was deliberate so much as the principles are universal and this work really applies to everyone. And so it's just naturally found its resonance with all different types of people from all walks of life. And we have students in around 50 countries now. And so there are these commonalities that people start to see emerging and that we have the same core fears that we, no matter what our upbringing is, it dissolves into these same patterns in our behavior, in our fears, in our needs, in our desires and what we want. And so there's universality in that unites people and brings people together, and they start to see that they are more similar than they are different, and that they may look different on the outside. They may have different religious beliefs or political beliefs or whatever, but they start to find those places where we really are the same.
Mm. Do you see like the universal attractiveness of what you teach as like an outward expression of who you are or who you've become? Because I know that one of the superpowers that you talk about you having in the course as a person and as a professional is this not master manifester, that's another one, but super connector. You make connections between people. And part of how I see that coming through is that it's almost like you have a good enough relationship with your energy where you have this light switch where you can be like, okay, I am universally accepting of everyone now, you know, and then you can turn it on. And it's almost like you're universally approachable. That's a better way of putting it. And so many people would say that that's a gift, that you can be like just this social butterfly, or you can relate to everyone, or you can be able to give advice to anyone because of the commonalities that we have. But I kind of see that more of like a developed trait, you know, like, would you say that that is a trait that's developed? And if so, like, how do we get there? Like, we're not born with the ability to just interact with anybody on an even playing field.
Yeah, I would say there's probably some elements of nature and nurture in that. I think I've always been an outgoing type person, but I think my superpower was really born out of my deepest wound. And so when I was younger, I had a really high need to be liked and accepted. And if I didn't stay in touch with someone, and if they fell out of my life, I felt that there was something wrong with me, or I was unlovable in some way. And so I would keep in touch with everyone I'd ever met and develop this capacity for deep listening and really getting to know them. But it was really coming from a place of fear at that time. And as I've healed and become more integrated, it's become my gift and my superpower. And I've traveled to maybe 70 countries now and lived in all different types of environments and come across all different cultures and types of people. And yeah, it is an ability now to just to drop in and connect with people from all different walks of life. But it really, for me, it came out of my greatest wound. And so I think as we heal and we look at those parts of ourselves that feel unworthy or unlovable, or like we don't belong or fit in, or we're afraid of being rejected or abandoned, when we heal those core wounds, it doesn't matter as much. And so we can take more risks and approach people in a different way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I can relate to a lot of that. I mean, I grew up never feeling like I fit in and always wanting deeper, more intimate connection. And for the longest time, even through part of my adult life, like I would say that I felt like the person in the room full of people that still felt alone. So like even during social events or during growth experiences, and I still have those wounds come up occasionally. But it is through that I have developed the desire to help other people connect. And in doing so, like in wanting that, it's part of the reason why I've framed like my company and my offerings the way that I have, you know, like this podcast, I can call it a podcast about health, but really I love the approach of like, it's a podcast about relationships. And one of those relationships is with our health. Right. And so one of like my favorite inspirational lines of thought that I've had in recent years comes from Shaman Durek. And he says that shamanism is all about relationships. And I've since taken that to be like, oh, relationships in his context and now in my own are not just between people. It's with like literally everything. Like right. You have a relationship with your house, with how you eat, with how you sleep. And that's what he means by that. And so part of what I'm trying to do here is be like, okay, so how can we be more conscious about how we interact? And it's just, do you think that anybody can come to a place where they experience wanting to share their growth, where it's not out of like a core wound? Because it's a very interesting experience to sit here and listen to you share that your main work that you've been so successful at has still come out of trauma, despite the fact that I know dozens or hundreds of people just through the Flow Mastery courses, not to mention all of the speaking events you've been to and all of the workshops you participate in and all of that, like credit you with giving them this idea of like, we can overcome our traumas. That's really a big part of what you help people do in Flow Mastery, is you give them the tools to help themselves overcome it in part. Does anybody's mission come from anywhere other than, oh, I used to have this blocking my way, but now I'm going to leverage it as a tool to help others overcome that?
I think for the most part, when we're learning from the challenges that we face in life or the traumas that we've had, we have these incredible opportunities to grow and evolve if we choose them and take them and have the tools. So very often someone's mission is coming from something that they've overcome. I wouldn't say that it has to come from that. And I think as you heal and integrate, your inspiration often comes from a different place. And so initially it may come from wanting to heal and move past these different core wounds and traumas, but then it shifts into a more pure inspiration and intuition.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's almost like it could be one or the other, and ultimately it might not even really matter, right? Like if part of your dharma is to overcome something that is one of your biggest obstacles and then use that in order to develop your work, then that's one thing, but the work would still be there without the trauma.
Well, it's the classic hero's journey, right? So there's this, in overcoming whatever it is that you've been through, then you take the medicine back to your community and all of the learnings and growth that you've had. And so I think that is very often the case when we're going through that path.
Yeah, absolutely. For people a little bit earlier on in the path, though, I want to jump back to this idea of being more universally approachable, or at least opening yourself up to be that in certain moments. We live in a time where there's extreme amounts of division happening right now, and where if you're tuned into the wrong channels, we have these messages we're bombarded with where it's like we attract the opposite of that, where we're supposed, it's almost like we're taught that we're supposed to disregard people on first impression. And there's tons of people right now stuck in these divisive bubbles of echo chambers that are clashing against each other, right? And so it's just the amount of judgment that is done on small fragments. I mean, you know, what is it like? Is Twitter up to 280 words now or characters? Like, I don't pay attention to Twitter.
No idea.
But, you know, it used to be 140. I think they doubled it now. But like, people judge like entire other like entities, like, you know, we're all representations of consciousness based on these little word snippets. And it's just totally crazy to me the amount of energy spent arguing when that's not, no matter what, it's not a moment of growth. Even if you are on the right side, like there's a lot of spiritual warriors out there on social media trying to share the truth, but while they're yelling, they're not making a difference, right? And so that all comes back to like how you identify yourself and how strongly you believe that identity actually holds true. How has flow changed how you identify yourself in the world?
Wow, that's a big question. I think really coming to the understanding that our reality is subjective, and spending so much of my time unpacking my bias and what I believe to be true and looking at where that's come from. So I grew up Catholic, so I had a number of different beliefs about good and bad, right and wrong. And so when I kind of first encountered this non-dual teaching, I was really triggered by it. I was like, of course there's good and bad. Of course there's right and wrong. And when I started to really look at that and see how that was creating struggle and suffering in my life and shifted my perspective around that and really recognizing that we're all operating from our programming and our conditioning. Mm. And unless we're looking at that, we're going to default to that. And the way our brains work, we're actually sorting and filtering information to match what we already believe to be true. We have confirmation bias. And so as I've done the work to peel back these beliefs and how I identify in the world, I came to know myself very differently. And so I had a moment, I was living in the Middle East and had a lot of time on my hands and really just asked the classic, who am I question in a reflective meditation, and just started peeling back all of the layers of how I got value in the world or how other people saw me and how I would introduce myself. And so looking at all of these ways and realizing that none of them were true, none of them were actually who I am, came to this place to know myself as love at my essence, which kind of sounds corny, but it was really none of the ways that I was self-identifying were actually who I am at my very essence. And so I started to loosen that grip on, you know, all of these egoic identities and thought, what if I just live from my essence as my essential self? And that became my focus. If I were to live as love, what would love do in this scenario? And really, I've kind of always been a person who saw all perspectives. And to be honest, when I was younger, I judged myself for it because I didn't have really strong opinions because I could see all sides. And now I'm really seeing that that is what provides so much emotional freedom for me. And so I'm not holding on to my way being the right way. And I can allow someone else's perspective to be true simultaneously. And that creates so much freedom. And at the same time, I will have my opinions and, thoughts about different things, but I'm not holding on so tightly that whatever I believe is the right thing. I can absolutely see how other people could see it from another perspective. And so I think so much of the polarization and the division that we're experiencing right now on so many levels is because people feel so strongly that they're right and the other person is wrong. And, from the opposite side as well. And so they're willing to fight for that and not open to other people's perspectives being also true.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. I can totally relate in the way kind of like, instead of rejecting an opinion that does not align with how I thought things worked, I can now question, like, this person believes this so strongly that, it's not always an argument, but like the beliefs that they're holding on to, regardless of where they came from, are meaningful to them. Right. Everybody's perspective is meaningful to them in their own context. And so it's like, you can look behind the curtain and be like, why is it meaningful and where does it come from? And then is mine all that much better? Where is the level, or is it just different? And it's like, it's not our own faults for other people holding different beliefs with, almost 8 billion people on Earth now. Right. Do any of these common things, like topics that make people uncomfortable, still come up for you? Like, is there discomfort manifested in your field around topics like gender or politics or race or anything like that? Or it has the entire perspective shifted of being able to view it from, I guess, like a higher plane where these people have a point, those people have a point. Like, are you shaken by any of this? Like, does it come up in your field in a negative context?
Well, even in how you're sharing it, there's bias and judgment in that, calling it negative or a higher plane, then it's putting it in a different a hierarchical structure. And
right.
I don't get triggered by a lot of those things as much as other people do, but of course there's injustices that I see in the world that that I feel strongly about. And I feel that the more that we do this work to all of us unpack our own bias and unpack our belief systems and start to question all of that, the more we come to an equanimous place and we can meet other people in that. I'm not going to say I never get triggered by world events or, things that come up, but when I do, I immediately go to my tools and I'll check in and see like what's coming up for me right now. What fear is alive, or what am I making this mean? And immediately start the work, because I know that, when something's being activated in me, it's an opportunity to liberate myself from whatever my belief is that's creating that.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the work, like one of the flow principles just popped into my head and now it just slipped back out. But you said like when you're faced with the fear that there is always like a lesson, it like when you have a reaction, then obviously there is some sort of limiting belief or trauma or programming or conditioning that is welling up. And then you have to look at, okay, so like, how is this conspiring in my favor? That was the one that just came in and slipped out, And so how do you then see that as a positive, which is a lot of what flow mastery is about, right? Like every single time we are faced with any challenge in life, we can then be like, what is the lesson in that? Like, if this is for my highest good, then what is the message and the feeling that I'm feeling right now? And that gets a little tricky because a lot of these systemic divisions in society, they don't come from us. They come from our parents and they come from their parents, or just sociological conditioning in general during our upbringings, like just the whole community, unfortunately. And that's healing over generations, but it's not completely gone, obviously, at the point in our lives. And so for something that's multi-generational or systemic, how do we then look at it and be like, okay, so how is that conspiring in my favor? Does that make sense?
Totally. And, you know, it's not to say that taking on this belief that life is conspiring in my favor and everything is happening for me is not just bypassing and finding, you know, the positive or the growth or the learning in it. That's an important aspect of it, but more importantly is doing the work and processing the emotional triggers, the things that are coming up, going into the fear and allowing yourself to feel and transmute these different emotional patterns, looking at the different trauma imprints, whether it's your own personal trauma or epigenetically, you know, transgenerational things that have been passed down. And it starts with us. We need to do our own work first. And as a collective, we all need to be doing this work. And so, yeah, there absolutely is systemic injustice that's built into our systems, into our society, because the people who have created these systems that are now starting to crumble, you know, hundreds of years ago, were operating from a different level of consciousness. And so they have been passing down trauma and different beliefs and patterns for, you know, all of these years. And then if we don't start to examine it, then we just take that on ourselves. And so it really starts with us to do the work, but then we really need to bring these tools into school systems and equip children. You know, children naturally live in flow, but then it's conditioned out of them. But we need to give kids the tools and mindsets to go through life that are supportive, and give them the tools to regulate their nervous systems, to be with their emotions and process them rather than avoiding them, and create systems that are supportive of this work, and then helping people to start to unpack, like I said, all of these different biases that we carry, and then we can start to change the system. If we're to rebuild all of these systems that are now crumbling, whether it's the political system, the financial system, healthcare, any of it, if we're rebuilding it from the same level of consciousness, we get more of the same problems, right? Mm. So we need to start to do this work and examine these beliefs that we're, you know, just blindly operating by for the most part. Like if we're going to start rebuilding, we have to reimagine society. And if we want a world that's more equitable, collaborative, we need to start to look at all of the ways that we're operating from this outdated conditioning.
Hmm. As people out there who are trying to contribute to bringing this new reality, like into the physical world where children are raised with an understanding of cooperation and sustainability and of just like the models of what the future has to be, like how do we teach people how to react and respond when maybe expectations of these labels that no longer serve us are impressed upon them? You know, like when we encounter people forcing expectation of what they judge us to be, how do we live above that? How do we overcome like the expectations of you're a man or you're a woman or you're black or you're white, or et cetera, you know, because that's, there is the one thing of we have to overcome the systemic issue, which is rebuilding of those crumbling systems. But then there's also the grassroots of how does somebody listening to this, when this episode comes out, live above like their, I guess, reactions to expectations impressed upon them in everyday life?
Well, how we respond is always a choice. And so it always comes back to ourselves and starting with ourselves, doing the work. And something that triggers one person won't necessarily trigger another person. So using those opportunities to look at, okay, you know, what about this is upsetting me, or why am I reacting in this way? And really starting to process all of that is how we rise above. You know, society may not be ready to change, right? So we're still existing in a world that is, you know, full of competition and, you know, people stepping all over each other to get ahead and not taking care of our planet. And all of these things still exist. So
yeah,
you know, we need to find a way to remain equanimous and keep our center despite what's going on around us. And it always comes back to us doing the work first. And the way that we make change, there's a lot of people who think that you need to be angry and like have this desire to change coming from, like we were talking about earlier, from a place of wounding or trauma, and have that grit to want to change the system. And, you know, that's absolutely one way to do it. And you can do it from a place of inspiration and where you vision the world going from a place, and then you're able to respond and not be so reactive. Because when we're just reactive and fighting the system and fighting, it's, you know, often has pushback from the other side. And so I see it as there's two ways to do it. And there is justified anger in certain senses. I totally understand that. And I think there's another way to create change in the world.
Yeah. I believe wholeheartedly that rather than an argument, it is a simple matter of crowding out like obsolete and inefficient systems with ones that just work better. And that's why, you know, a lot of people in the kind of green entrepreneurial space, even though green's been hijacked by Democrats now is a bad word, but like truly green, not like the green, the, you know, the green plan or whatever. Like, I don't pay enough attention to the news to know the real titles of any of these things, but the entrepreneurial space that's into saving the world and, you know, humanity and all of that, they talk about how it is truly in the private sector where the future is nowadays. It's not in government. It's not in politics. It is in individual people with truly empowering ideas to change schools, to change our energy systems, to change our infrastructure. And like that is more of a balanced, energetic pursuit than trying to attack the other side, right? If there are sides, it's too nuanced to say it's like A or B. But in that more balanced pursuit, there's also a more balanced, like masculine, feminine, energetic balance, you know, as far as the duality goes. Like you have to be stern, but you have to be nurturing as well. As somebody who's really trying to help people grow in many of the same ways that Flow Mastery does help people grow, I'm finding that there is this balance between how I express myself and where I'm trying to take people in the same way that we need balance in systemic healing, where people talk about how the patriarchy is dominant and the matriarchy is rising with the age of Aquarius and everything. And a lot of people talk about this in esoteric terms as if it's not individually relatable. But I've found in my own personal evolution and also in the work that I'm doing with helping other people that the more we grow, the more energetically balanced we become between the masculine and feminine aspects, like within our individual beings. And I am trying to explain how I feel like any system or solution to systems that is truly rooted in truth and faith and knowledge, like a really high level of attunement with what is right for the world, has that balance as well. What I want to ask is, have you seen masculine feminine balance in your own life or with Flow Mastery come as a byproduct of growth, or has it ever been a target for you in your own personal evolution? Do you believe that it comes to everyone that grows towards a natural state of being, which is what we need to come to as a society, right? As a natural state of being.
Yeah. Wow. There's so much in there that I wanted to speak to. Well, first, you know, just talking about in the creation of these new systems that we're imagining, to me, it makes more sense to focus on where we want to go rather than what we don't want to be. Because when we're putting all of our energy and attention to what's broken and what we need to fix, it's implying that, you know, we're not already whole and we're putting all of this energy onto what's broken. And then we inadvertently create more of that energy. And so if we focus on the vision and what we want to pull us forward and what we want to create, that feels to me like a better way to go about it. And speaking to masculine, feminine, yes, I feel as we heal, we come more into balance. And I used to think balance was a dirty word. You know, it was like, oh, that's so boring. And when I was younger and I had a significant amount of trauma to overcome, I needed chaos. I needed adrenaline. I needed to live in perpetual fight or flight to feel alive because I was so numb. And so this idea of balance just felt like, oh, that's so boring. And the pendulum swung back naturally toward balance as I healed and integrated. And so, yes, we've been dominated by the patriarchy for centuries. And, you know, a lot of people say the future is feminine and we have to move into a more matriarchal. But for me, the most powerful is the integration of both, right? Even if you think about, we have duality in our brain structure. We have a right and a left side of our brains, and we have this beautiful structure to connect them because we're meant to use all of it. We don't want to be dominant. Or, I mean, we kind of naturally are dominant in certain ways, but really, I think using all of ourselves and the unification of the masculine and feminine energies and bringing them into balance is where we are at our most powerful. And so same with, like, we mostly live in our heads and everyone's talking about how we need to be more heart-centered. And it's like, okay, so the pendulum would swing to the heart, but we don't want to be just in our hearts. We want to make the connection between the heart and the mind and use both of them. Same with logic and intuition. I really feel that it's the harmony of both of these energies where we're at our optimal being. And, you know, for many years, I was very much more in my masculine energy. And that was a reaction to the trauma that I had experienced and, you know, have definitely swung to the other side of the pendulum. And now I feel like I've come back more into balance. And there's times where I need to be using more of that masculine energy and drive and making things happen. And there's other times where I need to be more in the allowing and having access to the full range of our being is, I feel, the more optimal way to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like that's such a beautiful way to put it. It's scalable too. I just think that it needs to be like that on an individual level. I feel like it's a natural conclusion, but then when you talk about on a company level or a community or municipal level, it gets a little bit more tricky, you know, like where do you see us going with balancing that out in like a corporate setting? Like, imagine how amazing that would be if there was balance between masculine and feminine energies in corporations or in companies or businesses. And I know that there has to be some out there, but I think we're a long ways off from having it be the norm rather than the exception.
Yeah, I would say I just came out of an Awakening Conscious Leadership training, and I do believe there are companies in this conscious capitalism movement and these other movements for having awakened leadership and leaders that are leading with vulnerability and are more open-hearted and leading from a different place. So I do think that not only is it possible, but studies have shown that they're actually more successful. So I think there's an incredible opportunity there for more awakened leadership and bringing people into that, just seeing vulnerability as a superpower. And, we have all these ideas that, you know, if I show my feelings, I'll look weak, or, people won't trust my leadership, but that's not necessarily the case. And when we model that for other people at the top levels, then it trickles into the culture of the entire company, and you have less burnout and you have people that are thriving, and an opportunity for people to be more in their gifts. So I think it's entirely possible. Are we there? No, I think there's a long way to go at the societal level and the individual level. You know, there's not, there's a long way to go and a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. We started the talk by kind of talking about how a lot of our labels fall away as we grow. But like, are there any parts of ourselves that we should consciously hold on to as opposed to letting go of? Because when I'm in the work, like when I'm creating, or when I am sharing, like when I'm doing a solo episode of this podcast, for example, it seems like the more aligned with spirit I am, the less of myself exists, as if when I'm my whole self, I am more than the sum of my parts. Like when you're just a cipher for information and you're kind of in this flow state as opposed to flow consciousness, where it just pours through. It's almost like I am less myself and more of something more. But there has to be differentiation from one person to the other, right? Like there is a less than aligned way in order to share and create together. And then there is a more aligned way where we are more alike than different, but we still have to be individuals. And I feel almost like flow mastery is that way to find what aspects of your individual self are really worth holding on to. And so how do we then leverage those parts that are really true in bringing people together and heightening the collective?
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. And so I would say it's a paradox. So there's like most things. So it's really that being the hollow bone, like you're talking about, the more I get my ego out of the way, the less attached I am to how I sound, how I look, what I'm going to say, because I need it. You know, I need to sound smart right now so people will think well of me. The less I have of that, the more I'm connecting to my true inspiration, to, you know, connecting and accessing wisdom through my superconscious, as opposed to, you know, I have to look a certain way or sound a certain way so that I'm liked, because that's coming from the ego. And so the more our actual essence comes through, those qualities of ourselves that are aligned with spirit, of truth and love and compassion, and these more elevated states, you know, those are the things. But again, we don't want to hang on too tightly to any of it, because that's not who you are either. Because there can be spiritual ego and getting caught up in, you know, I'm so compassionate, I'm so loving, and, you know, then that becomes part of the ego as well. And at the same time, yes, you are an individuated expression of the divine, and we all have these unique ways of showing up and being in the world that make us so special. And so being in our gifts, in our zone of genius, and showing up from that place without attachment to, you know, any recognition for it, or it's really aligning with what brings you joy. And So staying in those gifts that bring you joy, that are elevating and supporting others, I'd say, you know, if you were to attach to anything, that would be it. But again, at the same time, you know, this is all about the realization that none of this is actually us.
Right. But so it's so funny how it comes back to that, because it's almost like that's a natural answer, right? The thing that brings you joy is what you need to hold on to as like that core identity, because that is a present time moment, being here now, expression of like highest excitement, right? Which is one of the flow principles, is to follow your highest excitement at all times. It's amazing to me, though, jumping back once again, how people talk about things that bring them joy in an argumentative context. So there's a disconnect here. You know, it's not a disconnect between what you said or my understanding of what you said, but then when you look out in the world, I know a lot of really passionate, humble people who are really high vibration when you meet them within the context of comfort, where everybody in the room is kind of like in consensus of, you know, going back to those echo chambers. It's a beautiful space to go to a healing retreat or a summit where it is having to do with higher levels of consciousness and higher levels of solutions to the world's problems. But then these people leave these containers for growth, and our actions, I'm not completely innocent in this either, but I try to avoid it best I can, are not expressive of what we feel is right on the inside. So I think earlier, maybe 2020, I had a conversation with one of my friends, Zachary Riles Connor, who is another chiropractic student, who's one of the most amazing philosophical minds that I have ever personally met. You know, like, he's going to be one of the guys in 100 years where his books are the ones that are like people are going to read. 3 generations from now, people are not going to remember like Carl Jung or like Alan Watts. It's going to be like Zachary Riles Connor. It's like the next. Nice. Yeah, like he's very, very powerful. And like one of the things we talked about is that the elephant in the room is that we're yelling information at each other in an emotional argument, and you can't solve an emotional outcry with facts, because like it's just going to be ignored. And so me yelling CDC statistics at, you know, people who are on one side or the other of like the whole virus thing, which we're not getting into today on the show, is not going to solve the fact that both sides are afraid for our future, right? So how do we, as people who want to bring others into joy, convey a message from a place of empathy? That's like the biggest question that we currently have now in society, right? Like, how do we remain empathetic while sharing our ideas?
Yeah, it's challenging because when someone is in a place of fear and reactivity, they're in their primitive brain. And so when they're in that, they have more tunnel vision and they aren't able to access their higher executive function. So they're not going to hear the facts, like you said. They're not going to be able to think rationally because they are caught in a fear response in this fight or flight or fawn and freeze. And so really meeting people where they're at, and you know, and this can be hard to do when you're in your own reactivity, but when you're in an equanimous place, you can meet someone where they're at and recognize that they are operating from a place of their own fear and conditioning. And for whatever reason, it's legitimate and that's where they're at. And so just acknowledging with empathy, you know, how mirroring back how they're feeling and showing some love and compassion for that. Like, wow, I really feel and hear that you're scared, that you're, you know, in this place of fear, and meeting them in that, as opposed to trying to convince them of anything. Cause when they're in that reactivity, they're not going to be able to receive it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny how easy it is to change our messaging if you really sit down and think about it. Like, I have like drafted social media posts or even read other people's posts where it was fear response versus fear response, or fear response versus anger response, or, you know, vice versa. And then been like, that message could have been like 3 or 4 words, and then like the tone, and it be a completely different conversation. But that's not the conversation that we're taught to have, because before we rise up into a different level of consciousness where we are more empathetic and we are more energetically balanced, as we talked about before, what we are inundated with are messages that are also the whole theme of society as far as media outlets go, is like this clickbaity, we're trying to get a fear response so that we get more ratings. But that's on a corporate level where people are trying to make money, and people don't understand that. People don't understand that we can, you know, take that for what it is, and then we don't have to follow that model. And a lot of people are following that model unconsciously, even in the circles of personal growth and natural health information. And I think that that is one of the systems. It's ironic that natural health and personal growth and personal development is one of the systems that actually needs to change. It's kind of flying under the radar, but it's true, because if it didn't need to change, then the result would be that we're not having this part of our conversation right now. I don't believe that Flow Mastery contributes to that. I believe that the Flow Mastery community is unbelievably positive and loving and caring, which is something really striking if you think about it, that none of the messages are divisive that come from people who have taken your coursework. Does that make sense? Have you noticed that theme?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that that is true, that, you know, everyone in our community is operating on this higher level all the time. Yeah, I think, you know, we're all humans navigating this experience in an increasingly polarized world. And I would say that our students are able to meet life's challenges in a more in a way that they are able to kind of dance with the challenges, and rather than be as reactive. So, you know, and I think the media is designed to hijack our nervous system. And, you know, so the more time that we spend listening to, whether it's mainstream media or even social media, like you said, in our own echo chambers, people can get really riled up. And, but we're choosing to spend time in these places that then activate us. So I personally, you know, taking care of my nervous system first, over any of that. And so I've spent less and less time on social in the last year or two, and really like to, I know what's going on, And I'm like, I don't have to stay in it or go down rabbit holes that are going to create fear in my nervous system. At the beginning of the pandemic, I definitely did that. And I realized quickly that so many of these rabbit holes that I was going down were creating anxiety in my nervous system. And I was choosing to be there and choosing to spend time in them because there was that compulsion to know the truth and to know what was going on. But then it also, I realized that I was coming from a higher level victim mentality and giving away my power. And so when I just kind of tuned out of most of that, I felt my sovereignty return and felt more aligned and balanced in my nervous system and was able then to navigate all of these things with much more ease and grace.
Mm. Is there something that you replaced that media consumption with? Like I, for one, less scrolling, more long form content, but also just investing in my own work, for example. Mm. Like is there something that you intentionally did more of these past couple of years as you toned down your consumption?
Yeah, I created a new company. I started a mental health startup to support underserved communities and went deep into my own inner work and healing. I have done a number of different trainings and to develop my own skill sets and followed different things that were piquing my curiosity and my interest. So I really found that the less time that I was engaging in things that were taking over my nervous system, the more bandwidth that I had to create and to play and learn and grow.
That's beautiful. I've kind of done the same, you know, reinvesting in myself in various ways for sure. Do you feel that people who haven't done that yet or taken the opportunity, given the tumultuous waters we currently find ourselves in, to kind of detach more from the narrative and invest more of themselves? Do you feel like the opportunity is still there? Like, is it too late if you didn't in May of 2020 decide you were going to go a different direction?
I don't think it's ever too late. I think there's always time to invest in ourselves and learn and grow. And I don't mean by invest spending lots of money. That can be one way, but you know, instead of going down these fear spirals, reading books that are going to be nurturing and supportive, talking to people and engaging in community that nourish you and make you and feel inspired, rather than spending time there. I feel like it's always a choice and that's always available to us. Now, that being said, you know, there are scenarios where people are in places in their lives where they don't have that privilege and there's their circumstances are such that, you know, that's not always available. And so, you know, if looking at Maslow's hierarchy, if someone's safety needs aren't being met and they're, you know, if they don't have the financial means or otherwise to take care of their basic needs, this is not going to be something that is a conversation that's even available to them. So it's hard to make sweeping statements like that. But I do feel that regardless of people's circumstances, there's always the capacity to transcend them. There are just like the playing field isn't level. So looking at that, you know, when we have these conversations, I feel is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that one of the things that you're trying to change with your new company, is bringing more of this type of opportunity for healing to, you know, more, I guess, to make a more even playing field?
I'm just, again, following my inspiration and wanting to support and serve where I can. And so during the first wave of lockdown, some other entrepreneur friends and I got together to see, one, where our passion was, and having lost my brother to an overdose and dealt with a lot of addiction in my family, mental health is an area that I feel passionate about, as well as some of these other friends. And we wanted to support and serve the people who need it the most and who don't have the access that you know, many of our circles do. And so, there's using the means and resources and privilege that I have to help other people who may not have that. I would say that was definitely something that arose given this, the pandemic, and just seeing how, it's not distributed equally. And there are communities and populations that are needing more support.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What is that organization called? What's your avenue? Like, how are you trying to help these people access these sorts of teachings?
Yeah, it's called Shine, and it's not teaching so much as peer-to-peer support. And so at this time, all of the mental health issues are on the rise, and there's just not enough support, whether it's clinical support people. There aren't enough clinicians to support people. And if there was, people don't have the money to pay for it. And if they did, there's a stigma often. So having trained peer support specialists who have shown incredible efficacy in supporting them and incentivizing them to continue to show up and serve with different corporate wellness incentives, things that are going to feed back into them as the caregivers, because caregivers, I know because this was me, tend to be the people who give until they fall apart and burn out. And so we'd be incentivizing them and giving them back, pouring back into them. So giving them access to different breathwork, meditation apps, nutritional supplements, whole foods, gym memberships, personal development trainings, continuing ed, something that's going to, one, make them a better resource to the people that they're serving, but two, also pour back into them and continue to help them to grow.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's amazing. So you're basically, by like the peer support system, it's almost like your services are almost integrating into, or they are integrating into the community by making it, you're almost like funding a grassroots movement from what it sounds like, right? Like that sounds really, really cool.
Thank you.
We definitely need a lot more of that right now. That like it's natural with like the unemployment rates, the amount of businesses that have shut down. I don't even think we'll have accurate numbers for a long time with how many people have lost their jobs, how many people are suffering, how many people have struggled with depression and anxiety as opposed to the past. And I know that unfortunately suicide rates have to be through the roof. And I have a history of struggling with mental health myself. There has been addiction in my family as well. And I just don't, in my experience, it's a little bit naive to say, but I almost feel like it's unfortunate, like it's ubiquitous. You know, I feel like people that say they've never struggled with any of these conditions are either sheltering themselves because they're not ready to address it, or maybe they've gotten very, very lucky. But in any case, the problem's growing and it needs solutions like that. I haven't heard of anything like that before. And that sounds like a really, really beautiful mission and way of approaching it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that I was living with generalized anxiety for so many years until I was at a retreat after my brother died and they had pointed that out to me. And then it all made sense because I had a different understanding of what anxiety was. And I didn't realize that in my type A people-pleasing overachiever mode, I was micromanaging and controlling my life so much and was like so afraid to let go of control because I thought it would all fall apart, that I was living in this low-grade anxiety and I wasn't even aware of it. So to your point, there's a lot of people who, it becomes our normal. This is just how I am. And so we don't realize how good we can feel sometimes. You know, it's like when your baseline, this is all you've ever known. And it's the same with nutrition and, you know, having access to whole foods and things that are going to feed your cells. You know, if you've been living a standard American diet way and you think, oh, I feel good. And then you make the shift and you detoxify and you get rid of all the toxic chemicals in your life and you start to eat whole foods. It's like, whoa, I had no idea I could feel this good. But you just thought, you know, what you were experiencing was normal. And that's how it is because you never knew any other way. And it's the same with our emotions too. So if we haven't been given the tools to process and release our emotions, what other ways are we going to do it? We're going to repress them. We're going to suppress them. We're going to escape and avoid them. And we don't have any other ways. And so it makes sense why we would use those tools because we didn't have better ones. And, you know, we may not even realize that we're operating with these tendencies toward depression or anxiety or, you know, any other flavor of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's funny. The brain is a master at fooling us into our baseline understanding of what we're supposed to feel like. It's just this giant filter of information, right? So that they talk about how many millions of bits of information we're bombarded with a day in the modern world, and that it is our mind's job to kind of try to assemble that into some sense of normalcy, right? And that can, like, the spectrum is so large that people with much lower standards of living than you or I can feel normal on any given day, just like we do. And there's just no average. You know, there's always different ways that we can achieve. And it's just unbelievable that even people with the tools and with everything available to them, we can become complacent, right? And then we can forget sometimes and not realize how better or worse we feel than we have in the past. It's funny that way. It's almost like there needs to be constant upkeep. And one of the ways that I upkeep myself is through techniques and lessons that I learned through you and Justin. So for you to then go and make tools available to people who might not ever come across Flow Mastery on the internet is really quite cool. I just have a few more places that I want to go really quick. One of the things that you're doing through this new venture is acknowledging the fact that although a lot of healing experiences are best had in intramural, co-ed, general environments like Flow Mastery, where people from all different walks of life and backgrounds come together and grow together, there need to also be healing environments made available to people when it comes to personal growth or overcoming traumas or outgrowing hardship in your life that are very specific. I feel like this is taken too far sometimes, but then not acknowledged enough in other areas. Like, I know that you have a background in working with developmentally challenged children in a past chapter in your life. And so I know that your passion for help, was it autistic children you worked with in the past? Yeah. So your passion for helping people who need more help than average goes way back. And it is crucially important for us to honor the fact that equal opportunity doesn't exist and equal starting points don't exist either. But then where is a healthy balance between that highly specialized healing or learning environment? Because it doesn't always have to be a need for healing, but matter of just like some people just need more help in order to learn and grow. And the generalized healing environment, because I feel like there is maybe almost the risk of personal or spiritual bypassing of like sticking with your comfort zone in other areas of health, like say a men's only retreat or a woman's only retreat or so on and so forth. There's a lot of these kinds of trends where, going back to the social bubble, you're going to be more attracted to people that are sharing an alike experience. And there is a need at some point in your growth cycle to be like, I am now going to go out and go somewhere I am uncomfortable because there's all sorts of different people. And so how do we avoid this bottlenecking while still paying respect to the fact that there are groups of people and individuals that need that specificity, but then we need to be encouraged to go beyond that. You know, it's our job as people helping others grow to take people in a certain niche and then help them evolve beyond what attracted them to that experience in the first place, right?
Yeah, I would say there's incredible value in both of those experiences. And I'm not a man, so I can't pretend I can understand the experience of being a man. And so I think it's really valuable for men to have men's work and facilitators of men's work that understand the experience of being a man, which I, you know, will not have in this lifetime. And so same thing for women or BIPOC, or, you know, there's all these different experiences. And that's why peer support specialists are so effective, because it's someone who has shared lived experience. So someone who's been through the journey of alcoholism can support someone better than someone who's never had that experience. And so I think there's incredible value in getting support and doing deep healing work with people that look like you, sound like you, have had a shared lived experience, that have a deeper understanding of what it's like in that experience. And at the same time, you know, coming back to what we were talking about before, the balance point, I feel like, you know, as we're all healing in our silos and our groups, there comes a time where there is value in the integration of those. And how do we all come together and you know, go through this healing journey together?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. There needs to be space for both. And I feel like it's part of my journey to help people who are in that transition phase of wanting to expand beyond the individual trait or background. Probably because that's what I relate to, is having to let go of a lot of who I thought I was and what I thought I was in order to be who I am now. And I'm kind of in that phase where I hold a lot of importance in letting go of aspects of me I didn't need in my heart. And so when I see a men's group, I might be a little bit judgmental even, because I'm just like, are you talking about the need for the sacred feminine in that men's group? You know, and then are you talking in your women's group about the need for the sacred masculine embodied in the female body in order to be your divine self? You know, so that's just something that I'm really passionate about. I believe that integration is key, but also we need more spaces for the individual to seek out similarities with others as well. So yeah, just a really beautiful topic that I love talking about.
Yeah, I love it that you have that awareness. It's so important.
Yeah. I would just like to ask, I ask a lot of people this, like, overall, we are in a little bit of a sociological conundrum, obviously, depending on how you look at it. Like, my life has not changed much other than the discussions within my life changing during this time period. I have also, like you, taken it as a time to reinvest in myself and in my truth. And a lot of other people have as well. And I believe that a lot of my audience tunes in because they are taking it upon themselves to, you know, invest in their own realities during this time period. But I really feel like there needs to be a more like broad span message of permission for anybody to do that, you know? And so having said that, like, what do you think the average person needs more of right now in order to give themselves permission to just have a little bit more grace and self-love day to day? Like, what do we need more of?
Well, that was going to be my answer, is more love, more self-love, more self-compassion, and really meeting ourselves in a place of tenderness and compassion and grace, especially in these times that are incredibly challenging for so many on so many levels, that really, you know, if we are quote unquote struggling or, you know, experiencing these lows or, experiencing anxiety or experiencing depression or whatever in these times, that not adding a layer of judgment and shame on that, you know, we're facing these collective hardships that are so massive, and just meeting ourselves with tenderness and compassion in this experience. And I think, more willingness to ask for support when we need it. Because there's this idea that we need to go through things alone and we have to look tough and, you know, like infallible, that nothing's going to get to us, but that, you know, just creates so much more struggle. And so really the openness to asking for support and help when we need it, and meeting ourselves with grace and compassion when we are feeling challenged or triggered. And, you know, I think more self-love is probably the answer to most things.
Just giving yourself the time, you know, the space. Yeah, it really does come down to that. I just hope that the more that my conversations with people arrive at that conclusion, that there's one more person every time at least that's just like, okay, I'm going to take 20 minutes for myself today, or I'm not going to be ashamed of where I'm at. And like you said, just all of these conclusions that we need to arrive to that we don't have enough reminders of. So thank you so much for sharing that sentiment.
Just one more thing that's always on my heart is this idea that having needs is needy. And yes, there definitely is a spectrum of it. And, you know, like having moved through codependence, growing up with a family with a lot of addiction, this is so real for me, because I got to a place where I was like, oh, well, I can't have any needs because then I'm needy. But then we shut down this, this aspect of ourselves, and we're human beings, and we're interdependent. So we don't want to be dependent, but we are interdependent and we need each other for things. And so really giving ourselves permission to have needs, and it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to ask for support, and it doesn't make us weak and needy, because we all, you know, we're relational beings. Like you said earlier, we're in relationship with everything in the natural world and with each other. And that's how we come to know ourselves, is through the mirror of others and through life. And so if we're not opening to that experience, we're also depriving ourselves of the ability to learn and grow, you know, from the reflections of being in relationship with other.
That is amazing. Yeah, man, the permission to have needs is so powerful. I have so many people where, like, over and over again, I find that people are ashamed of having specific wants, even let alone needs. You know, the whole sociological conditioning of it's bad to be picky, or it's bad to ask for more than everyone around you, or something else than, or just one little extra thing. And yeah, that's so powerful. That struck a chord with me too.
Well, it's the examination of what's creating that need, right? And sometimes we know it's coming from a wound, and that's okay too. And again, coming to a place of compassion, like, I feel this need welling up within me, and I know where it's coming from. And it's okay to ask the people around you that love you to meet that need, even if it is coming from a wound. Hey, you know, I recognize this is coming from my wounding, and would you be willing to meet me in this way? Because it would help me to heal and grow. You know, there's yeah. ways of acknowledging our needs, you know, whether they're coming from wounding or not, and asking to be met with love and support.
Yeah, that's beautiful. All we need to do is ask. That's exactly right. And I hope that more people, after having listened to this, ask for what they need in any given moment, because that would definitely help a lot of people.
And then to receive it, you know, is the other piece.
Yeah.
And actually open ourselves to receiving the love, the care, the support of others.
Because yeah, when we don't, we're
depriving them of the gift of giving as well.
Mm. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for that. Yeah, I don't think that I think that that's a perfect place to end. That message is so pure and so universal that I don't think that we can find a better place. So I just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom. It's been such a beautiful conversation. Thank you for entertaining my mental gymnastics. And it was a pleasure to reconnect with you. It's always wonderful to get to see you, and it's been too long. So you're just a constant inspiration to me. I know that you don't post often on social media, but when you do, I always stop and like, what does Jackie have to say? Because I know that it's always going to be something of value, or at least something of interest. And so I really, I'm blessed to have you as an influence in my life. And I know that many, many other people that have done wonderful things as a result of your influence can say the same. And just thank you for spending the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you and your thoughtful questions.
Awesome. And I'll throw up all your contact information and everything that you're doing up on the show notes. But if you want to just quickly shout out for where people might be able to best reach you.
Yeah. FlowConsciousnessInstitute.com or FlowConsciousness.com is kind of the home for all of our trainings and workshops and papers. And I am leaning into the edge of whether I'll step back onto social and begin to share more. I haven't felt so inspired to be there in the last year or two, but feeling like maybe I'll step back into that. So no promises, but yeah, feel free to connect with me on Instagram or Facebook.
All right, great. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks again. And have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much. You too.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. If you would like to leave a review, I would absolutely appreciate on either iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you find the show. Please subscribe. Please leave a review. These mean the world to us. They help us understand what our audience is taking away from these conversations. And you know, we're pouring our hearts into each and every episode here. It ultimately helps us reach more people because these platforms favor shows that get reviews. So if you like the show and you want to show us some love, you want to give back, the absolute best and first way that you can begin to do that is to leave us a review. I hope that these discussions are making a difference in your lives, and I hope that you get some inspiration from this conversation with Jackie and I to carry some positive and proactive loving energy into your week, as I know I did. If you want to contribute to the show, you can head over to our website or our Instagram link tree and click on the donate button. And there you can buy us a cup of coffee. That's really just any amount that you would like to give. But in thinking about contributing to the production of the show, I'd like you to think what the show today was worth for you, whether that's $1 or $5 or whatever else comes to mind, whatever value in your life this show brought to you, be it an extra large Frappuccino at Starbucks or a 3 Michelin star dinner, whatever it might have struck a chord with you on whatever level, that would be fantastic. The show does not happen on its own. It is a lot of work. It is a lot of time. It is a lot of effort. And it is a labor of love, but if you would like to show us that you appreciate that labor of love, then head over and buy us a cup of coffee. Appreciate it. So until next week, when we get to share with you again, Hare Krishna.